Welcome to The Disappearing Mind, a unique podcast helping you find clarity and support along your dementia journey. Now, join National Dementia Trainer and Coach, Dawn Platt, for an all-new episode.
Hello and welcome back to The Disappearing Mind podcast. I am your host, Dawn Platt, and today we're diving into something that came up recently in a support group post, a topic that leaves families feeling uncertain. It's about the difference between memory care and assisted living, and specifically around activities and their role in preserving cognition. I want to give you a little context behind this episode and why I chose it. I am very passionate about all things dementia and memory care and support group. And I like families to be well-educated. So I was reading a post most recently from a family that was not really asking for advice, but posting something about her loved one. And I'm actually responding to the post that someone else posted back to her. I want to define truth, and I want families to have good information to make solid choices, whatever that choice might be for their family. So let's go ahead and get into this. I'll set this up. And while I do, I have a very special guest today as we engage in this conversation, Maggie Murillo. Welcome, Maggie.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, good. I'm so glad Maggie's here. Maggie has over 20 years, give or take, right? Of memory care experience, mostly as a caregiver, but also as a memory care director. She has done a fabulous job. Her families love her, and I thought it would be interesting to have her on the podcast today so we could talk about real conversations. I think that the podcast aims to support you with real information, right? We don't cover it up. You know, we like to talk about real conversation. So before I get into the context and the setting of why I chose this podcast, Maggie, let's learn a little bit about you. I know you're passionate about all things memory care, and I know that your families really respect you. And so tell us a little bit about your background, why you love dementia, why you do what you do.
So I grew up in Maine on a farm with a great-grandmother who they called a senile old bat. Back before we had true diagnosis.
Can you imagine?
I would be in so much trouble if I said that nowadays. So I was around it. And then when I became a CNA, my first day working in a memory care, I actually got stabbed in the side of the head with a fork.
Oh my goodness!
And later that day, that resident came up to give me a hug. And I said, no, you stabbed me. She's like, oh, I'd never do that. I love you.
Oh.
And that's when I realized that it's about her and where she was at. And she loved me at that moment. She held no grudges against me.
Right.
And I was like, these are my people. And
what a revelation.
They welcomed me in their world, and I've been there ever since.
Absolutely. So what is your favorite part of being a memory care director?
It is learning about my residents and their legacy, their life. They have done so many amazing things in their lives that we will never even have the opportunity to. They've traveled the world. They've been, unfortunately, involved in wars, in peacetime. I've worked with doctors and lawyers and nuns who are just the most amazing human beings, and we can learn so much from them if we just sit down and listen.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very glad to have you on the podcast today. I know our listeners are going to learn a lot from this episode, and they will appreciate your honesty, right, for what they're going through. So let me go ahead and set this up, kind of the context. So again, a support group participant, and this was online, shared a thought-provoking point. I was reading about the differences, she said, between memory care and assisted living. And one thing really stood out. The activities in the memory care are focused on preserving cognition. As my loved one is in assisted living with virtually no activities, I'm thinking of looking into memory care. So in your experience, she asked, what are the activities that preserve cognition? So most families don't really realize that that's the focus of programming or should be the focus of therapeutic programming in a memory care setting. But I want to really point this out, and we'll get in this today as Maggie and I unpack this, but it was the response and the post of another family that prompted me to have this very important discussion today on the podcast. And here's what that person said. And although it was their opinion, and we all have them, I really felt like we needed to shed some light on the truth and why we do programming. So her response was, I would not have high hopes of preserving cognition. Activities are good, but I have not seen enough to make me think anything is even close to preserving cognition. I just believe it's a degenerative disease, and its path is rarely slowed down by anything in my experience with two loved ones, both in memory care units. How sad. I mean, it's sad. Obviously, she's being honest. She's not being facetious. She's not being, it's her perception, right? But how sad is this that she feels that way and that she obviously is not in a program or a community that is offering that type of programming that's engaging and meaningful, even to make differences. But we'll unpack that when we get to it. So let's talk about what it really means for caregivers and families and those living with dementia, just how important it is to have good programming in memory care. So let's get into it, Maggie. Memory care versus assisted living. What's the difference? So I'm going to define the two types of care as I see it. And let's just engage in some experience and some examples of the families that we know, that many hundreds, maybe thousands of families that we've worked with over our careers. So let's define the two types of care. Assisted living is primarily for individuals who need help with daily activities, things like bathing, grooming, toileting, meal preparation, laundry, transportation. I mean, that's really, you know, the setting of what we think of basically when we think of assisted living, although there's healthcare involved too. But the focus in assisted living is more about physical care and support, with less attention to cognition challenges. And that's where we're going to see the difference. Now, memory care is specialized, specifically designed for individuals who have ADRD, Alzheimer's disease or related dementias, or memory issues, let's say it that way, right? It emphasizes cognitive function support, safety, and activities that tailored to the individual to stimulate their mental functions, right? To help them use those types of functions. In memory care, the goal is not to just provide for a person's physical needs, right? Although we do all of those things, but to engage the stimulation of the brain as much as possible to either maintain or slow down cognitive decline. So Maggie, let's talk about that. What have you seen in your career, and how has programming, and I know you have a top-notch program that we're going to talk about in another episode, but how have you seen the difference? I mean, you've worked in multiple settings, right? You're pretty familiar with other memory cares in your market, and even families, I heard this just yesterday, that have moved from other places, right, which we will respect and not name. Tell us your story and what you see in this scenario.
Well, it's the outlook It's our perspective. In assisted living, we're very much geared towards their health and their well-being physically and clinically. When I bring someone to my memory care, we're switching to the well-being of their quality of life, engaging them as a person, honoring their legacy compared to clinical. This is a terminal disease.
Yes.
We are not going to fix it.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that, like, 20 years ago when I started this, memory cares were more like a warehouse where we just took care of the physical needs until they passed away.
Right.
We realized they're there. They deserve that high quality of life. So we take clinical care and put that second and their quality of life first. So our programs are not activities. They're programs to engage them every aspect that we can of their life and make them feel like it's their home and they belong.
Absolutely, and that's wonderful. So let's, while we do that, let's just talk about some of the basic things that you do. We'll dive into deeper, but what are some of the things you do? I know you do some out-of-the-box things, right? But for instance, what do you do with the men in your memory care?
Well, here's a newsflash. Men don't always like to hang out with women all the time.
No.
They're not a big fan of yoga.
Uh-huh. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So in my memory care neighborhood, my program director, my person that's doing most of the programs through the day is a man.
Uh-huh.
And so he brings that element to them that he is their buddy. So we make sure that we have things geared towards them. I have a gentleman who was a landscape architect before he retired.
Mm-hmm.
So he helps oversee our gardening projects. He has a little book we go through. They decide what plants will actually live in Southwest Florida.
Uh-huh.
Shocker, there isn't many.
Right.
And he helps us prepare our garden each change of season, what vegetables, what flowers we should grow. That is part of his life. One of my gentlemen loved to fish. So they talk about fishing. We actually have lures and things, rods that they do. They also have a men's group and a veterans group. So they get together, they sit around, they have beer, potato chips, watch football, and play poker and complain about the women. This is important.
Yes,
absolutely. This is what they would have done.
This
is real life. We see it now. We get together with, you know, couples. What happens? We all divide up. The women complain about the men. The men complain about the women. Women have wine. The men have a couple beers.
Right.
That's their life. It shouldn't have to stop because they have a dementia diagnosis.
Absolutely. I'm so glad to hear that you're doing that and you're sharing that. You're right. Over the years, memory care neighborhoods, I hate the word unit, and occasionally I'll slip that in, but memory care neighborhoods, communities, right? It's their home, right? Have evolved. And we have really realized what can be done, what should be done, right? And how we make that difference in the lives of the people that we serve. So, I want to talk a little bit about why does this matter, right? Why does it matter? Memory care isn't just about safety, although safety is our top priority, both of our top priority and always will be, right? Because safety is of major concern, but it's about preserving the brain, the legacy, the person, right? And keeping connections alive for as long as possible. And isn't that what we want? I know for my mom, I wanted to keep mom. And I lost her in bits and pieces, right? And families, they want to keep certain parts that are important to them. And that may be different for each family member, but how important is it? I will tell you, it was hugely important that my mom never forgot my name. And I know that happens. And I know the heartache behind that, but it was still one of those things that you can't really wait it until it happens to you where you scale that out. But, you know, activities that are structured to preserve cognitive health. And let me break this down a little bit. Maggie, you can help me. What was important to them? His occupation, right? His giving back to community. is meaningful, right? We all want to have purpose in our life. And sometimes when we retire, our health goes south. You know, one of the most disturbing things is that we can't contribute the way we used to, whatever that looks like, right? And do some of the things. And that really can diminish a person, especially a person who's, you know, memory is going. And of course, we've talked about this from short-term memory to long-term memory. So they preserve the backstories in their life much longer, right? And can tap into those. So, you know, how do you go about that, you know, in your programs to ensure, I know you have tons of stories, right? But to ensure that you're valuing the person and that you're tapping into that legacy. You know, many times in memory care, people will try and blot that out, right? They don't see how valuable that it is for that person to pick the vegetables or give an opinion or do whatever it is that is done. Share some other stories of what you've seen and how that's impacted the person as well as the family.
Well, learning about them, hunting for that information, and finding out what's important to them. What is that element that will make them smile? What is that an element that will brighten their face up?
Mm-hmm.
I had one woman who went to Juilliard, and then she left Juilliard, and it was time for World War II. She became a Jeep mechanic in Idaho.
Wow.
And so towards the end of her life, she started losing her verbal skills, but I would put her up to a piano. She could still play the piano. And then after she got done playing the piano, because we fired off those brain, she started being able to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so she started naming me Marcia and one of my med techs, Doris.
Right.
When I spoke to her son, come to find out, that was the name of her sisters.
Oh, wow.
So she saw us and she considered us family.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so when you talk about maybe your loved one loses your name,
mm-hmm.
but how do they react when you enter the room?
Exactly.
Maybe they don't know your name anymore, but does their face light up? Do they know you're a comfortable person? And that's important. That means their brain and their heart still recognizes.
And that's what's most important, right? You know, names are okay, but do they recognize you? Do they smile at you? Do they greet you? How do you make them feel, right? That's really important. So what, you know, let's talk a little bit more about the role of activities or programming in memory care, right? So what activities in memory care aim to do, and we've hit on this a little bit, but I want to dig into it because I want you to really understand the huge difference between... Well, let's talk about that, Maggie. The huge difference between activities in IL, independent living, or assisted living, AL, and memory care. So let's talk about really just the difference between just being entertainment-based and socialization-based, and now that our program is really based on what we do every day. Share a little bit about
that.
Well,
I have a gentleman who loves to paint.
Mm-hmm.
He painted for relaxation his whole life. In a traditional assisted living art class, even though he knows how to paint, he would fail because he would need to go to the cabinet. He would need to know what he needed for supplies. He's not able to put those steps together anymore. Mm-hmm. In a memory care-based program, my program director is collecting the items. So he is set up with everything he needs to succeed. So he is getting to live that quality, that relaxation, that hobby that he loved and succeed at it no matter what. And they would fail and feel like a failure mm-hmm. in a traditional assisted living activity. But in a memory care program where we're geared towards their success, they get to.
Absolutely. In memory care, we do non-fail activities. We facilitate. We step in. Right? For the skills that are lost. We simply fill those skills, which, and we don't talk about it, right? Makes them feel better about what they're doing. And we know because we assess them, we know what they can do and we know what they can't do. And so there are a number of valuable principles behind memory care program. And by the way, at the end of this podcast, I will have you convinced that memory care is effective. That's how much Maggie and I believe in therapeutic programming. And we have really seen the difference over time with many, multiple residents. We have seen them live quality of life. They still pass away, right? With Alzheimer's disease or vascular dementia or whatever, but we've made a difference, right? We have brought meaning, and engagement to their life. And really, at the end of the day, that's very rewarding. That's what it's all about, right? So, you know, the reason that they're different, right, is because, you know, we know and understand that having a structured program in memory care, keeping them busy, right, having something for them to engage in throughout the day is a very effective means to cope with dementia, right? And so our activities encourage residents to engage in ways that feel meaningful to them. And Maggie, you know, while we're here, before I go into the examples of some of the let me just change from cognitive to memory preserving activities or memory retrieving activities might be a better way. Let's talk a little bit about how we know, what tools do we use, or how do we know where people are, even in memory care. We don't do one size fits all programming. We actually don't. And then talk a little bit about the life story and why that's important that you and your caregivers know that.
I need to know who they are. It's not who they are now, but who they were before this disease. Where did they grow up? Are they from a small family? Are they from a big family? All of this plays parts in our lives. Our childhood made us who we are now. Our young adulthood makes us who we are now. So we need to know all of that. I had a gentleman who was getting up in the middle of the night and going outside, and no one could figure out how to get him back inside. He grew up on a farm, and at 4 o'clock in the morning, he would have to get up every day before school and go and get the cows and bring them in to be milked.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hadn't done that research, I wouldn't have found that out. So by knowing that, we actually got one of those robotic ponies.
Uh-huh.
And we set up a barn area for him. So at 4 o'clock in the morning when he got up, because that's when he woke up, instead of him fetching the cows, I would say, you know what, I'm going to have Andy go out and get the cows. Can you take care of Butternut this morning?
Mm-hmm.
And so every morning he would feed our robotic pony and brush him down and get him ready for the day. And that's how we were able to change that. But if you don't know that about your person, you can't help them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How important is that for your caregivers?
It is vital. And I realize our resident profile that we gather is multiple pages,
mm-hmm.
and I will break it down into 3 or 4 paragraphs. But before someone even moves to my neighborhood, we're talking about them.
Yeah.
We're getting to know them. And we want to make sure that they have a same caregiver all the time. They have the same people taking care of them and being with them. So we're learning, oh, they were a doctor, or, you know, they grew up in Germany. They're, you know, English is their second language. They were a nurse. Well, you know, if you were a nurse for 30 years, you're going to be a different resident than someone who was a housewife for 30 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even how we discuss things with you is going to be different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not all of us are the same. I have one resident who, she was one of 2 girls, and they thought she was going to be a boy. And she wasn't, but she was daddy's little slugger.
Uh-huh.
So she has a dry sense of humor. She likes to goof off. She likes practical jokes to her. So if you go in there and talk to her like, you know, the sweet little woman, she's not going to do a thing you say. But if you go in there and bounce on her bed and, you know, and tickle her and
mm-hmm.
everything else, she's right along with you, and she's probably going to slap you on the butt and go about her day. And
oh, my goodness.
Done.
How great is that?
But if you don't know that about that person and you go into each one of them
yeah.
the same exact way, you're going to get not great results.
Absolutely. For our listeners out there, how important to you is it that caregivers know who your loved one is? It's an expectation that you should have when you choose a memory care community. If nothing else, preserving legacy, how valuable it is. I know for me and for the hundreds and thousands of families that I've coached over the years, they wanted us to know who mom was, who dad was, who brother was, who husband was. That's really what's important. And I know that's important to you. And I want you to consider that in the memory care touring process as you choose a caregiving spot for your loved one, that legacy and knowing and preserving, connecting with the past for your loved one is hugely important and an expectation that I think you should have and know about. But let's get into some of the examples, and I listed a few that we have in our programs, right, of memory preserving activities and the variety of how we might scale them. But here are just a few examples of that type of programming that when you tour or when you look at the calendar of the community where your loved one may be, these are some of the things that you're going to want to see on that calendar. So something like reminiscent therapy, right, which is using pictures or music or items, maybe personal items, to spark memories and discussion. Maybe that diploma from the university, maybe an award they won, maybe a picture they painted. Reminiscent therapy is very, very important. It's a connection, right, that they'll often keep for a very long period of time, long after short-term memories are gone. And then cognitive exercises. What do I mean by that? Using the brain in multiple ways, right? But when I'm talking about cognitive exercises here, I'm talking about simple puzzles, maybe basic puzzles, different games, right, that utilize brain function, and tasks that encourage memory recall, right? Like that old game concentration, right? And reasoning. Those are the types of skills that can be really scaled up and down, right? It doesn't have to be hard or difficult or that kind of thing. You can really connect with certain aspects. Then physical activities. You know, physical activities are really, really important. So gentle movement, Maggie mentioned yoga, tai chi, that helps with that whole brain body kind of health. Simple walking, strolling in the garden, right? Stretching, chair exercises. So this doesn't have to be cardio or anything like that. These are scientifically proven to preserve memory, to enhance memory, to keep memory for a longer period of time. So, and then art or music therapy. You know, you've mentioned artists, and I think artists are eclectic. They're a unique group of people, and that's something that really stimulates them. But music, you know, music is generational. There's so many genres, and people, if they're connected to that, you know, we've seen people sing when they haven't talked for a year, or hum, right, or tap. So let's talk a little bit about this, Maggie, because this is exciting stuff here. This isn't just, you know, throwing a ball or, you know, doing bingo. And people still love bingo. If you love bingo, you love bingo. But sometimes they never connected to bingo, and they're not going to connect to bingo. We really need to think about these types of things. So, Maggie, talk about some of these things. I know you do some out-of-the-box kinds of things, but talk about some of these things and why they're important to your residents.
Well, one of my out-of-the-box things is we do projects, woodworking projects. We made the wishing well planter box for our garden. Well, one of my ladies, she was a school teacher, she read the instructions. I had some gentlemen putting together the wishing wells, mm-hmm. another gentleman telling them what they were doing wrong.
Yes.
And then
you need those.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, there ladies and the gentlemen working together, trying to assemble it because it was multi-parts. And then, of course, Ruth reading the directions to everyone. And so this was a group activity. They were all using their own strengths, the hand-eye coordination. They were having to move the parts around. So this is one great way of using their whole brain. Another, like I talked about, my friend who played the piano, and then after that she was able to speak when right. she really wasn't able to speak most of the time. But even the love of music, the history of the music. You met one of my residents the other day, and what was the first thing she wanted to show you? The picture of her granddaughter with Chris Stapleton.
Absolutely, yeah.
She knew that. She knows
she
all
was
songs.
So proud of that family photo wall. And although she couldn't name what some of them were doing, she identified what family member it was, whether she knew the name or not, right? And she went through all of them, and it was like turning on a light switch. You know, she went from actually, you know, I'm kind of sad, I'm kind of depressed, I don't know what to do, to just the light switch went on, and a whole different emotion. She lit up. Like, she would have kept me in there for hours probably. That's how important it was for her to reminisce through that wall. And of course I reacted to everyone because she was sharing something with me that is super valuable to her and that she holds on to dearly. And it was powerful. It was like stepping into someone's life. That's how I see it when we do the reminisce, the connecting with what they know. Imagine losing your memory, okay? And I say this because, I mean, we know this, but imagine losing so many things, but then having that one or two things that just were yours, right? How often would you want to visit that?
All day.
All day. Every day.
That would
and,
be your
and
life.
And you know what? A lot of people will say, well, she just does that over and over. Then let them do it over and over because they live there. They thrive there. It gives meaning and purpose to life. When I left her, she was a different person. And not because I did anything, but because I connected with her, came into her world, and she shared her world with me, and I responded. What an incredible experience that always is for me and for them. And for them. So I think that's fabulous. But, you know, these activities, these kinds of things are scientifically proven, right, to maintain or slow memory loss. And let's just talk about that. You know, I know people, and even in the post, the woman has doubted that. And I'm sure that you're doubting that because you've been impacted intensely by both your parents suffering from ADRD. And I get it. I understand the pain. I can see the pain. But science tells us that we can slow that process, and we have seen it. And I want to talk about it in this fashion. And you know, I don't mean this in a negative kind of way, but Maggie, you and I have been in the healthcare industry a long time. And what's the difference when you go into a nursing home that has an Alzheimer's unit, that they don't do activities and people are lined up in a memory care? What's the difference?
It's like you're in heaven's waiting room. People are just lined up. There's no joy. I always say you can learn so much about a memory care or a skilled nursing facility when you walk in the door. How does your heart feel?
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like home? When you go in there and it's sterile and everyone's lined up and everyone's kind of just sitting there asleep, what kind of life is that?
Yes.
They deserve so much more.
And they're capable, right, Maggie?
Yes, they're capable of it. It's amazing. We'll pick a country that has to do one of my residents' heritage, especially if they speak that language, and we'll learn some words in Spanish or learn some words in French. And I'll have people say, well, they're not going to remember it. They may not remember what they learned, but they fired up their whole brain. And it's like it's turned on those light bulbs today.
Absolutely.
And they're more cognitively aware that day because we've turned on the juices.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an amazing. I love it. I never get tired of it. I see it. I visualize it. And I think it's really, really important for us to, you know that we're impacting quality of life. And let's unpack that a little bit because, you know, no one's saying here that we're curing disease. No one is saying that people don't pass away because they do. But all people pass away, right, of something other. But we're impacting quality of life because we're engaging them in something that's meaningful to them. They feel purpose. They feel like they contribute with opinion. Like they feel part of something, right? And don't we all want that? Like we all want to be part of the conversation, right? Or contribute on something that we're experienced in or that's impacted our life. That's where we impact quality of life. And so when I say that, you know, when you choose a memory care that does not have quality memory care programming, you are not going to see these things. You're not going to experience what Maggie and I are talking about. And let me say, I understand the differences between all types of dementia. And I understand that that ability to engage people differs. We engage people in different ways as they stage through the disease. And maybe I want to talk about that a little bit. Obviously, not everybody's going to woodwork. How do you manage that as people decline? And people decline, but they don't have to decline so rapidly that they go into a vegetative state unless they severely have a type of dementia that totally destroys everything. Then we may see that lack of response or engagement. But still at that time, Maggie, what do you do to make a difference for those people at end stage of life? What do you do for them?
This is where learning about them pays off. Finding out about them and what they enjoy. I have a gentleman, and so he sits with us, and he will join in. We'll talk about money. He talks about how terrible kids are with money. But in those 2 or 3 minutes, he's getting that quality of life. And when he's part of the group, you will watch him in exercise class, and he will sometimes join in the exercises. It will be smaller movements, but he's part of life. He's not sitting in a corner. He's involved. And that's important. They need to be involved in life. Can they do what they did 20 years ago?
Right.
No. But what can he do? You know, what is something they enjoy? One of my residents just passed away. Up until the day before she passed away, she was involved. She was hugging people. She spanked me on the butt. You know, she was giggling. She was laughing. She was singing. She lived her highest quality of life that she could have right up until the day before she passed away.
Absolutely.
Is it the what she did 50 years ago? No, but she had joy in her day. And that's what we want.
Absolutely. So let's address those families that are dealing with late stage whose loved one may be bedbound, maybe not as responsive, maybe nonverbal, have to be fed. Let's talk a little bit about touch and sensory and how that still impacts that person who may not seem to respond, but does.
That touch is vital. Finding out what kind of music they enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
What's their favorite food? Were they a dog or a cat person? They're like, why does that matter? That does matter. Talking to them about their life, because even as they're laying there, say, oh, they're not there. They are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can be talking to them about their life, that's important. No one wants to be scared and alone and dying.
Absolutely.
If they can feel like someone's there, cares about them, that counts.
Absolutely. It brings such comfort. And what a privilege it is for us in the healthcare industry to, you know, be able to do that. But I want to give some final thoughts as we begin to close today, and then I'm going to ask Maggie, you know, one last question so that she can address our listening audience. But some of the final thoughts I want to bring home. If you're considering memory care for your loved one, remember, it's not just a place for safety. It's a place for connection. And Maggie has shared so many things today on the podcast. It's a place for meaning and maintaining cognition as much as possible. Even when it seems like the person you love is slipping away, these activities and programs in memory care are designed to make sure there's still a piece of them with us every single day, and that we attempt to touch that place, right, to connect with them. But, you know, I want to, you know, give you some encouragement to visit or talk to memory care providers if you're actually using one or if you're considering one. If you haven't seen how memory care activities are structured, consider visiting one or two communities, asking about their programming, taking a look at that. And activities are so much more than a calendar or schedule, right? They're a tool for preservation of legacy of who your loved one is. Well, thank you for being on the podcast today. If this episode resonates with you, you know, share it with someone who might be facing a similar challenge now or in the future. You know, to our listeners, it's important. I'm going to ask you if you would go to our podcast series, and after you listen, leave a comment or rate the podcast. We want to know what it is that you want to hear, and that would be really important. Visit us at thedisappearingmind.com. Look at our resources page, all the episodes that are available to you. But I want to say, in closing, I'm your host, Dawn Platt. Make it a memorable day.
Thank you for joining us for the Disappearing Mind podcast. We hope it's helped you find clarity and support along your journey. Be sure to subscribe to never miss an episode, visit our website to suggest future topics, and share the podcast with friends and family.